Hey there, Knicks fans. How you doing? Do you hear the sound? Those are jingle bells to make us aware that Knicks basketball has begun. Why does Knicks basketball equate to jingle bells? I don't know, but I had some bells right here next to my laptop and I rung them. And I know Jeremy Cohen's happy about that. He's a Jew, but he loves jingling bells. Don't you, Jeremy?
This is off to a roaring start. Yeah,
we really are.
I should have taken the audio. I cooked up some latkes yesterday. I should have just had the oil sizzling sound. Maybe Andrew can fit that in there. Knicks basketball's back. It's just preseason, and something's never changed, and some things are quite different. So it's great that even in preseason we're able to do something. But it was. It feels like a tale of two. Well, no, I shouldn't say that. It feels like each night was different and yet completely the same all at once.
Well, it's like Christmas and Hanukkah, right? It's like celebrations, right? Different kind of celebrations. But things to take away from both. Maybe, you know, a little bit more self-loathing with one than the other. Is that fair to say? I've heard.
Yeah, it was like decorating a Christmas tree or a Hanukkah bush one night, and then the next night just setting it on fire. And tonight was setting it on fire.
Was tonight Festivus? I think tonight
Festivus is the 23rd. We got some time.
We have time
to get tinsel on the pole and air out the grievances. We'll get there.
So that means opening night is going to be Festivus. I like where this is heading. goodness. Jeremy Cohen, thank you for joining me. We are recording this right after the Knicks have indeed finished playing the second of their two initial preseason games. And I just want to, before we start, I have to give a quick shout out to my wife, because today is our 6th year wedding anniversary. And we went out to dinner in a little mini igloo, which they have popping up here on Long Island. So you're all contained, you know, it's COVID safe. And then we got home from the igloo like at 7:06. And I turn on the TV and we have been watching, and this is how we celebrated our 6-year anniversary. We've been celebrating it by watching the Knicks pretend to play basketball for the last 2 hours. And the elevator goes like, must not go up all the way in her head that she's okay with this scenario. It's like continuing to run out, Dennis Smith Jr. to play point guard. That was a low blow. Shout out to my wife. Who is hopefully finding a better run of things in her marriage than Dennis Smith Jr. is running, finding things and running the Knicks offense. Okay. You have to watch on YouTube to see Jeremy's face during all that. It's really great.
I mean, you're not wrong. At least
I'm not wrong.
That's what I saw.
I'm not wrong. And it's funny because actually one of my biggest takeaways from the first game was I was incredibly impressed by Dennis Smith Jr. because as much as his, offense was a little rough, I was really impressed by his defense, which actually wasn't bad again tonight, but he's just talk about out of sorts on offense. We'll get to it. First things first, give me your, we're coming out of this weekend, I think, with more good than bad in terms of vibes, you know, overall thoughts. What is your big takeaway?
I'd say the one of the primary takeaways for me, at least on the positive end, is we're seeing a lot of burn from players who are significantly younger. We saw like tonight where maybe some of those lineups don't actually work out very well. Like when that lineup started the fourth quarter, things started to slip a little bit. So there's some growing pains depending on mixes and matches, but there are also some combinations that worked really nicely. I thought it was great that Quickley got in there tonight. Knox looked fine in game one, not so great game two. Toppin, same thing. RJ, it seemed to be the opposite. It was really nice to see him, you know, that had that first quarter, the first game where he looked rusty, maybe second quarter too. And then all of a sudden he just started to explode. And you can see the strength and the intelligence and how things start to click for him. And, you know, the 1-3 that he's made was a wide open shot. So that's obviously something to consider. But he had some really nice pull up jumpers and he connected on them. They were silky smooth. So
17 of his last 27 from the field after that 0-6 start, which is like, you got to love that.
Exactly. You know, and then, of course, you can turn more towards the bad, which is Julius Randle in a lot of ways, because, you know, you can look at the scores as usual and things might stand out a little bit in terms of the numbers, but the ends don't seem to justify the means because it's confusing for me. You know, sometimes I appreciate the fact that he's actually able to handle the ball, but then he does too much and then he'll hit a shot that's really impressive. It's like, okay, well, you did the wrong thing, but you're rewarded for it. And that's great for you.
But we're not rewarded.
Right.
The fans, we are not rewarded. Yeah.
No, exactly.
Because it's not in service. It's not in service of the long-term goals of this team. Sorry to cut you off.
No, that's exactly it. And it's certainly problematic and we'll dive into that consistently. But for me, the biggest thing was that it seems like a lot of the old warts are still the same. Three-point shooting is still abysmal. Free throw percentage is still atrocious.
Do you know what their 3-point percentage is
tonight?
Well, no, since in the two, I know what the numbers are. They're I just tweeted it out before, 13 for 57, I believe.
Yeah,
it might actually it may even be worse if they took a three at the end of the game there, maybe 13 for 58. So
it's like what, 21% maybe, something
21,
like that?
22 off the top of my head. Yeah.
Yeah. That can't keep happening. And of course, based on the personnel that they have, it seems quite possibly likely to continue. And that's going to, you know, again, this team to me is very much that influx team, and it's going to suck to see for a lot of the year. They're going to be a ton of growing pains. And the few guys who are able to shoot are going to look great as a result of being in such a cluttered lineup. But it's a shame because those players would also, Burks, exactly.
Burks look good.
Yeah. He would look even better if he had better spacing around him.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't have to look like this, like what Marcus Morris looked like last year, where he just was on fire from three. You don't have to have one guy who can just shoot it. So, but it was, I guess, above all, the biggest takeaway for me was probably the positives from RJ. It's just really nice to see him start to take that leap. You know, we've got plenty of time. It's two preseason games. It's been 9 months, et cetera, et cetera. But it was nice to see that kind of visualization of how he can progress. And that was on full display tonight.
You stole a lot of what I was going to say. I'm not mad at you, though.
You had a Periscope to say it. This is my time.
This is your
time. I also did not listen to the Periscope because I knew we'd be talking. So,
well, no, but it's just, I think it always makes me feel, because you're smarter than I am. And when you say the things that I'm thinking, I mean, listen, you know it.
We each have our strengths.
Yeah. I mean, I drink beer. You know, are intelligent.
Tonight was a bourbon night, for what it's worth. So,
oh, really? I had a bourbon. I had my Friday night was my bourbon night. I actually had although I did have an old fashioned to start off my dinner before, and then I went to wine, and now I'm finishing off the evening with a stout. So again, clearly my takes are going to be on point. I thought, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to be positive. I'm going to be Kool-Aid John. I'm going to be rose colored glasses John. I'm going to be glass half full John. And I'm going to say, there were two things coming into the season that, putting aside the stuff that ultimately doesn't matter, the Randle spin moves and the, you know, are the lineup combinations, you know, absolutely perfect in the first two games that don't mean anything. It's all, put all that nonsense aside. Is there an organizational culture that shows that there is growth happening behind the scenes? And they gave up 84 points in the first game, and they just gave up 99 points in this game. And granted, it was still a bad Pistons team. But both games on the road, again, with no fans, but whatever. I think it's notable they didn't give up over 100 points in either game. They averaged giving up whatever it is, 91, 92 points. And I thought, with the exception of, like, you know, a handful of moments in the first half tonight, I thought the defensive effort in both games was really is what you want, right? And it's like, we could count the amount of plays on one hand where guys were standing around like with their hands out, like, with, you know, shrugging with the, like, that's good. And that makes me feel, and also, by the way, those couple of moments that we saw that, what did Tibbs do? Call a timeout and probably rip someone a new one. I'm loving that. And then the second thing, RJ, boy, man, has there been any, like, pro Nick podcaster / like writer blogger that's been harder on RJ than me?
That's a good question. I don't know if there has been. I mean, it's like loving of Dennis Smith Jr. and hating of RJ Barrett.
Well, but here's the thing. I've never hated on him because I keep going back to the same thing.
I'd be facetious, but yes.
You aren't. I hated on the year that he had because he was bad. And I will go to, I'll go to my grave arguing why he was bad. He was not good on either end of the floor. Eye test, numbers, whatever you want. He wasn't good. And it wasn't all the team. It was him. He was not good. The guy that we've seen over the last six quarters now is a different basketball player, especially the guy that we saw for a stretch of about 5 minutes in the third quarter when he looked the part of a guy that, like, give me the ball. I'm going to dictate the offense, and I'm going to figure out a way to just make some stuff happen, whether it's putting the ball in the hoop, spraying the ball around. That, to me, you know, was awesome. And we saw some flashes from Obi in the first game. I like what we saw there. But again, if the one big picture thing is the organization has to look like competent and, you know, like it's taking the job of basketball seriously, we could check that box a little bit. And then the development of one of these key young figures, I think we could start to maybe check that box again very early, but we like what we're seeing so far. Everything else is bad, pretty much, right? Because you look at the other young players. Yeah, well, let's go through them right now because we could, you know, that's as good an entree into the conversation as anything. Who do you want to start with? Well, let's start with this. Has any of the other young players been good? I think Frank has been okay.
Yeah, it's just he's barely seen time. I mean, limited moments. He and Quickly looked great at the end of the first half, and then they barely played. You know, Frank played a little bit in the end of the fourth and Quickly was on the floor at the end of the fourth. But other than that, that was really all they had. But let's start with Obi, because I think, you know, a lot of people are obviously very interested in how Obi Toppin is playing. You know, for the first game, and I don't want to sound like a Debbie Downer when I say this, but I saw a lot of comments about Obi looks good. He looks like an NBA player. And I'm here thinking like, yeah, he's 22 years old. He should be looking like an NBA player. Fair. If he's looking worse than that, then that's a bit of a cause for concern. The bar, I think, has to be a little bit higher with him because we can talk about his ceiling. But right now, I think the biggest thing with Obi is probably talking about his floor. And when you have games like the first one, that's fantastic. You know, he was energetic off the bench, high flying, a lot of dangerous passes, which he's certainly going to learn are not going to be able to fly in the NBA level. Yep. And then you see something like what happened tonight, which was he had a terrible shot selection. He was kind of all over the place. He missed
most of his threes.
He did. But the one he hit, I mean, the way that thing arcs, it is beautiful.
I think it was a Prez who had it on Twitter the other night that Obi shoots in like an effortless ball or something along those lines. I apologize if I'm getting the wrong Strickland person, but it was someone who's like, it's an easy ball, right? Yeah. And that's nice.
Yeah. And so, you know, there are definitely positives there. I thought the way he was able to create on one of those possessions on offense in the first game was fantastic. You know, he's going to get beaten in the post. He's going to look bad with off ball D sometimes. He's not a defender. The game is going to catch up for him. It's just a matter of how long it takes and how well positioned he can be and what the coaching structure can be. But, you know, I'd like to see more from him. It's only been two preseason games at that. So we've got plenty of time, but the sort of thing where, you can ask for a little bit more, of course, but it's at least you can see the path he's going to take. And I'd be very curious to see if he's able to crack the starting lineup because the lineup that Tibbs has gone to, especially with having DSJ and Mitch coming off the bench and Knox, you know, putting someone like Randall with that unit because of a lack of playmaking, a lack of proper ball distribution in some ways, that might benefit them in elevating Obi so he's in the starting lineup might be something I'd like to personally see. But,
oh boy.
You know, that's.
I mean, you really think there's a chance that that actually happens?
Not necessarily, but it's, you know, we've seen this for this lineup for two nights. And other than what, maybe a little bit in game one and at the start of the third quarter of game two, there hasn't been a whole lot of optimism, not a lot of great things to see. And one of the things that actually caught my eye is with Nerlens Noel, because you highlighted this in your newsletter, and it's going to drive me crazy for the entire season, is the fact that he'll set these flare screens that just he'll draw no contact. And it's something that Mitch does as well. And I think I saw a little bit tonight where there was a slight bump with Mitch, and that seemed to help. But other than that, they're kind of like, you know, cardboard in the wind or something. It just, they don't draw contact, and they like can't continue to the level they need to. But with Obi, again, nice things to see. We need to see more because he is at that bar.
Yeah. Of all the things that I might be worried about right now, Obi's probably at the bottom of the list, because like tonight, you saw him trying to make a couple moves and there were bodies there. And that's one thing he didn't see a lot of at Dayton. He didn't see a lot of bodies because he was out there playing center and there were four shooters on the floor. And he had a really good point guard, a really good college point guard. He gave that college point guard a lot of credit. I'm going to forget his name, of course, but like everything was going his way at Dayton. Now, I do think it's important to point out that the skill, again, and we already saw them the last game, when things are going his way, I think the effectiveness can be as high in the pros or nearly as high in the pros as it was at the college game. But you know, you start going through down the list of like, okay, who really needs to play with spacing in this rotation now? And RJ, we've said this for a year. Now you could add Obi to that list, right? And then you go down the guys who are going to see time for sure. And it's Elfrid Payton and it's Julius Randle. And it's Dennis Smith Jr. Maybe we shouldn't make that assumption. Who am I forgetting? I'm forgetting. Oh, and it's the centers. It's Mitch. It's Noel. And you want those guys to get time, right? You want rim protection. And I think by, you know, yes, Noel has slipped already a few screens, but I think Noel has played by and large pretty well. Mitch was inconsistent tonight, but I thought he bounced back after the five fouls and 13 minutes, whatever it was, something absurd. And he finished with good effort. I loved him in game one. I thought he really played well on the defensive end. In any case, these guys are going to need spacing. And he's the elephant in the room. He always comes back to Randle because Randle's on the team. He's getting 30 minutes a night. And if he's getting 30 minutes a night, that's another guy that occupies that prime real estate. So then what do you do, Jeremy? What do you do? You tell Jeremy, you tell Julius to go home and you know, take your ball and leave? He's still their best offensive creator on the team right now until we see a little bit more of what we saw from RJ tonight, which is insane because he's not good at it. But
I was puzzled why he was in the lineup down the stretch. Because, I mean, Detroit's pretty much taking out all of their best players.
Yeah.
It's a preseason game. Why do you have Julius Randle there? You sub Obi Toppin in with 1:04 left. For what reason?
But don't we know that answer? Because isn't he trying to figure out what works around Randle? Doesn't he look at Randle as like, all right, this is the best you gave me? Sure. I guess I got to figure it out. They need Randle. I can't believe I'm saying that, but they do. No, seriously. I get where you're coming from. Disagree with me.
No, you know, we're certainly well above the belief of cutting him because that's still just not a solid option or a plausible one whatsoever. But the idea of finding the right role for him, and he's just, you know, he's not a starter for a winning team. We know that this isn't going to be a winning team, even if he's starting or not. But that's why I would be so curious as to seeing how he would fit in with that second unit. Because if you've got DSJ in his playmaking and how he's forcing balls into ridiculous spots and errant passing and doing too much with it. Like tonight he got tripped up because he got double teamed as he was trying to do some sort of crossover. And the shot looks fine. But again, the bar for that was so low that it's nice.
It looks better.
Right. Exactly. Looks better. In comparison is what I'm getting. But yes. Yeah.
So low bars here.
Right. Right. So, you know, it's that sort of thing where you're going to have to play Randle, and you're probably gonna have to play him 20 to 25 minutes because that's simply who he is and his presence on the team, and you have him on the team and you can't get rid of him right now. So it's just finding that role of who he fits around well. Like, he had positive minutes with Mitchell Robinson under the Mike Miller era. It was, you know, somewhat brief, but that idea of if you're gonna maybe have Mitch come off the bench, and just quickly on Mitch, I agree, played really nicely in game one. Game two is very different story.
Up and down.
Yes. The thing about, you know, Obviously, I think he drew one foul per every 3 minutes, and he was playing 12 minutes, which if you do the math, that's four fouls, commits the fifth foul directly under the Knicks basket when Detroit has the ball. But he did a great job of staying in the game for the last like 7-8 minutes before he got checked out and Noel came in. And I thought that was nice that, you know, you could see that he was really conscientious because he had to be, but consistently keeping his hands up, not forcing anything. That was really great to see.
Yeah.
But if you're able to match Randall and Mitch together and have some sort of bench action, because Randall, I know, will be able to obliterate fours that are coming off the bench. You know, unless, of course, the sixth man is a great four, in which case it will be a different story.
You're right.
If he can take advantage of inferior players, that's only going to make him look better. And this is coming from me, the person who said, well, I would love to see Obi starting. There's the opportunity of if you start Randall, it's like, are you lowering his value by dropping him down a spot, by putting him on the bench?
I'm wondering,
are you losing value? Maybe you can actually gain value by saying, look, this guy can carve out a nice role. Expensive, of course, but for with the expiring money coming back and whatever it might be, you can find a spot for him on a team. It just has to translate to winning, and you have to have the right players around him. And
I just so here's the issue. Let's play this game, okay? He goes to the bench. Obi starts, right? With whatever, Noel or Mitch. I honestly don't think it really matters. Alongside, let's say Burks and RJ, you're starting point guard still up for Peyton, right?
It is.
So your spacing is still not great because at the rate he's going so far, teams are going to let Obi take all those shots. Teams are going to let RJ take all those shots. So I'm not. All you're doing is you're moving Randall to the bench. Where granted, he could take advantage of bad fours. Like, I agree. But again, talk about the 2020, the year of me saying things that if I heard myself at some, I'd be like, really? And yet, I'm going to say it. Alfred Payton is the one point guard that kind of reels Randall in. Like, here's the thing about Alfred Payton. He dictates the offense. Like, Dennis Smith Jr., the biggest issue with him hasn't been a shot or turnovers. I don't even know if he's turned the ball over yet, probably once or twice. Certainly not his defense. Defense has been good. He's not getting the team into his offensive sets. The team is like it's almost as if there is no point guard out there when he's running the show. And Frank, lots of nice things, tons of good things, but I'm not sure we're seeing Frank get the team into its offense.
But I also don't think he really has the opportunity. And this isn't me trying to give Frank an excuse. It's more that every moment in game one that Frank was on the court, he was partnered with
Dennis Smith Jr. tonight,
when I thought he finally had an opportunity to take the reins, Quickly then took on ball, reins. So it seems like the role is very clear on what they want Frank to be. They want him to be an off ball defensive specialist. Yeah, but
not to get sidetracked, but is that really that unfair of them? And again, Frank has been their best young player aside from RJ Barrett over the first two games. He's been very nice, but at the same time, got a couple traveling calls where it literally was he was not guarded. He just took a step too soon or whatever the case may be. There was a possession tonight that sticks in my head where the defenders, I think it was Killian Hayes or someone's playing 5 feet off him and he's going like side to side. And he's just like, I don't know. I was texting Spencer tonight and Spencer's like, Frank is the ideal point guard to run a team. If you have like a Luka, like whatever Luka is, like another guy in another position, you could essentially run the show, right?
High usage, versatile.
Exactly. Make the right pass, take the ball. Well, guess what? We don't fucking have that guy and he ain't coming through the door anytime soon. So it begs the question of like, okay, so what do you do with Frank? And like, yes, he ran the second unit more than admirably last year. I don't know that's the drum I'm going to bang this year is like give Frank the chance to run the second unit, as a point guard. My point is, I think Alfred Payton deserves to be the starting point guard of this team. And it might be in their best interest for him to be the starting point guard of this team, which again goes completely in the face of everything I said a minute ago, of trying to increase the spacing as much as possible for RJ Barrett and Obi Toppin, which is, I don't envy the decisions that Tom Thibodeau has. It's what it comes down to. It. It's like guys needed to come into this year a little better, and maybe it happens, but through two fake games, if you look at Dennis Smith Jr. and you look at Kevin Knox, and even if you look at Mitchell Robinson, I'm not sure we're seeing like, oh, that dude is, looks like a different guy after whatever he just did for the last 9 months. The only guy that we could say that about a little bit now is RJ Barrett. And granted, that's the most important guy. And if there was one guy you could be like, if anybody could, we could say that about, I want it to be RJ. So that's good news. But one of these other guys needs to, you know, needs to come forth and be like, yes, I am also taking the reins. So,
yeah. And just to reinforce, cause, and I know I speak for you on this. We're obviously saying this after two preseason games with a 9 month layoff. So there's plenty of time for every player on the roster, but
yes,
I mean, in terms of
goes without saying,
right. In terms of Frank, again, I at least want him to see that opportunity, and that's not really given to him.
That's fair. That's fair.
It'd be one thing if, you know, he finally got the chance to play on ball and was just constantly screwing up to the point where it's like, okay, well, he kind of ran out of chances and I can understand why, but that opportunity really hasn't been afforded to him. And then when you see a new player like Quickley, and granted, I'm not against the idea of Quickley running on ball. He, as he said in the past, I like it.
Point
guard for myself. A lot of time. I have no issue. I have no qualms with the idea of what Quickley can be or what they want to try to make him into. It's very much an issue of Dennis Smith Jr. Because trying to figure out a way to salvage some sort of trade value, which again, he does not have right now. If he did, I'm sure he would have been gone this summer or this offseason. And then as I completely forgot until they mentioned it, the fact that you're still missing Rivers. And how does he fit into the fold once he's healthy? And who does he bump for playing time? And are you basically just biding time until the trade deadline because you have so many players that you can try to wheel and deal on affordable contracts? What does that mean for player development before the deadline? And what does it mean for afterwards?
Well, look, Tibbs has said repeatedly, as has every coach, let's be clear about this, player development doesn't just happen in the game. Player development happens off the floor and this and that and the whole thing. That's going to need to be the case because let me just ask you this. We're going to take I want to ask you this and then we'll finish up with the rotation after a quick ad read, but two games in, what do you want to see? Do you want to see, cause there's a world where Tibbs could run out 10 kids, right? He could run out. Let's just name them real quick. Smith. I'm just picking one of the two. Smith, RJ. Who would it be? Knox, Obi, Mitch,
Dennis, or
the other one that we didn't say, whichever point guard doesn't start, Quickley, Iggy,
Spellman,
and who do we want to give do you want to give it to Miles Powell? Do you want to give it to, I'm sure maybe we're forgetting someone, but like there's that world, right? And then there's the world where we're getting RJ and Obi and Mitch. And nobody else and no other kids. That's a world that exists. So where is your balance before we get into what we think is going to happen and what we think the decisions are at stake? Where do you want to see happen?
Well, I think there's some merit to meritocracy in the sense of,
I should hope so.
You have better players ahead of you. If you want to play ahead of them, then you need to be better than them. I get that. It doesn't mean you should start all of your best players. I mean, of course, like, I would say RJ Barrett is a better player than whoever would be backing him up, or you know, whoever would be at the three. So he's going to be
the best player so far. Yeah.
But someone like Mitchell Robinson, where, you know, I mean, on what was it, Thursday, he had an Instagram live post that certainly caused some confusion. If it's a private thing where he's talking, where he was voicing his, issues or whatever it may
displeasure.
Be. I hope. Thank you. I hope everything is okay on a personal level. If it's professional, then that's the exact opposite of what you want to see. And then that would be, you know, a level of like, hey, maybe don't do that if it was in reaction to Noel. But we're speculating. Who knows? The point being.
And we never, ever speculate on That's this true. Podcast. Not once. Ever. Not once. Has never happened.
But the idea of, you know, if he's going to be consistently fouling against backup players on Detroit, how is he going to have the opportunity to play against starters on good teams moving forward without being in foul trouble and sent to the bench within the first, you know, 5 minutes of a game? So for me, it's very much like you've got at this moment, for guaranteed contracts, I think it's 9 players who are 23 years old or younger.
Sounds
if
right.
If you cut Spellman or Brazdeikis, then and bring on someone like Kid Gilchrist, it's 8. Even if it's 8, to me, that is a staggering amount of young players, and you're not going to be able to get all of them. It's going to be very much be like the best rise to the top, the cream rises to the top, and everyone else, you know, they likely sink. Like, I don't necessarily want to spend an entire season trying to see if Brazdeikis or Spellman are going to be just like end of the bench NBA players. That's not of a huge interest to me. Well, and I got news for you.
You're not going to have to.
Exactly. And I also know that if you see the best players that the Knicks have, if they're trying to prioritize them, putting decent players around them also helps. Because again, as we saw tonight, there was one lineup where it was like Desmond Jr., Knox, Mitch, Bullock, and one other player. I think it might have been Toppin. And it just looked atrocious. And it's that sort of thing where you can run it out. But if no one, if there's no, you're a teacher. Like, if you have a classroom that just tries to teach itself, they're probably going to run into issues. They might be able to come up with a few answers and maybe they can teach themselves something, but they're not going to be able to really learn at that capacity. And I know it's a very different field.
I'm definitely the Coach Fizdale of this analogy.
Regardless, you know, self-deprecation aside, the fact is that there needs to be some sort of reining in of the younger players.
There does.
And that's going to lead to one or two or maybe three guys who are not going to be on this team long term, but are able to help put these players in the position to succeed by providing spacing, like Burks. If you didn't have Burks in that lineup, that would be a disaster. But he's there and he's showing what he can do, a little bit of creation, a little bit of driving and cutting. That's great to see. You know, you hope that someone like Bullock or Rivers can get in there, Noel, any of these guys, where even if they're one-year mercenaries, it's not to the extent of they're going to screw everything up. It's that they know what their role is. They know what their usage rate's going to be. They're going to be reined in furthermore by the coaching staff, playing within the flow of the offense and the defense and being able to guide the younger players as they, you know, find successes in areas of development themselves is something I really want to see. So if he runs like a 10 to 12 man lineup, because we don't know what COVID's going to be like or short rest, all of these factors.
He's only going to play 10 guys a night, if that.
Probably. And if that's the case, you know.
He said as much. He says he wants it to be 9 or 10, and his history, 8 years worth of history shows that.
Yeah. So if it's going to be, you know, like 6 or 7 of those guys are still really young and the other 3, 4 getting significant minutes are players who are able to help them, you're not developing those players. You're developing the players around them. It doesn't mean prioritize those 3 or 4 guys, but it just means help put the younger players in a position to succeed so they feel like they're actually developing.
All right. We'll finish up with a quick conversation about the rotation right after we have a quick word from our sponsor. We know because Austin Rivers is still out and he's going to be back. And when he comes back, and I think he's going to be part of the rotation, if he is going to recover, because, you know, when a Nick gets hurt, they do recover. But when one of us is injured because of someone else's negligence, it can be a life-changing event. And when that happens, you want a strong legal team fighting for you to make sure you receive full compensation for your injuries. You want to be able to call your legal team whenever you want. You don't want to be a file on a shelf with hundreds of others, and you don't want your lawyers to be afraid to go to court. The legal team at Faruqi and Faruqi gives every client their personal cell phone number to call 24/7. They limit the number of clients they represent at one time, and they have a long track record of taking on insurance companies, corporations, and the government in court and winning, like the Knicks did on Friday night. Except Faruqi and Faruqi, you know, they don't have performances like you know, we saw tonight. And while prior results do not guarantee a similar outcome, you could learn more about them by going to N, as in Nancy, Y, as in York, legalteam.com. Again, the website is nylegalteam.com. Go check out Faruqi and Faruqi and see all of the services that they can offer you. My soul is not yet injured after these two first preseason games. I want that noted for the record.
Give it time.
You know, here, ultimately, here's why I can't come on here and rave mad about anything, because I can't even sit here and be like, here's the 10-man rotation I want to see, because I don't even know what that looks like. I really don't. I'll give you something before we get out of here. But what do we think are the biggest questions at this point? What are we looking for over the next? We have two preseason games left, and Fizz already said he's going to take the first 3, 4, 5, whatever regular season games to settle in on a rotation. It feels like Bullock is fighting for a spot. Is that fair to say?
Could be. Although, you know, I think unless he's traded to another team, I don't see him being waived.
Oh, no, I'm not.
Of playing time, yes, I would agree with that. Because
fighting for a spot in the rotation. Okay. We agree that he is fighting for a spot in the rotation. Do we think Frank is fighting for a spot in the rotation?
Yeah, I would say he's on the periphery.
Okay.
For sure.
And I want to note that, because tonight, we keep saying tonight, Sunday night, what happened was essentially the opposite of Friday night, which is that Frank was part of the initial 10-man unit, and then Bullock was like the 11th guy that came in place of Burks with the rest of the starters on Sunday night. That was essentially Frank. He came in at the end of the first half, and then had, I want to say, two stints in the second half. So not quite the same, but similar. Okay. Do we think that Dennis Smith Jr. is fighting for a place in the rotation?
I don't.
You think he's in?
I think he's in. You know, much to my chagrin, I think he's in. And it's the sort of thing where I see tweets about how Emmanuel Quickley is going to take his spot. And as much as I want to say absolutely, that sounds great to me, Tibbs's history of playing rookies and playing younger players seems to dictate otherwise. I know this is a very different experience than when he was in Chicago, a little bit more so than when he was in Minnesota. Maybe that first year is a little bit more on par. But it's this thought process of, we know how much the Knicks have been playing up Dennis Smith Jr. And we know that they're going to try to extract something from him. And again, like, I don't see the point based on what we've seen. I'm not trying to write him off, but it's also the sort of thing where I don't know how much he can really get in a short season of 40 games if he's staying healthy and if he's playing offensively like he is in terms of the decision-making. But it hasn't stopped them from doing something of the sort before. And if you have him completely on the outside looking in, then basically what you're saying is, all right, we're cool not even trying to get something from him. And they're just, I just don't see them writing him off right now. I think they're going to try to give it time. And maybe if after 20 to 25 games, if they don't see anything working, maybe they'll turn the page. But until then, I don't see him being written out.
Yeah, I don't either. And I joked a few times. He has been really good on defense. I think he had a moment tonight where his signals got crossed and he had a talking to on the bench from Johnny Bryant. But his defense, I thought, in game one was nothing really excellent. And I thought he had some nice moments on defense tonight. And he had a few moments on offense, you know, where he drove the lane. He took what was there. You know,
he had a nice mid-range jumper.
Yeah, you know, it's two preseason games. I think what we're going to see is, like you said, whether it's 20, 25 games, and they're going to see what they have. And then if they can get something out of him, great. If not, I think that's when they turned Quickley. And I think, you know what, in the grand scheme of things, Emmanuel Quickley is signed to a 4-year guaranteed contract, or 3 years guaranteed with a fourth year, you know, option. Taking 25 of those games of his rookie year and seeing, all right, let's give Dennis Smith Jr. one last shot. I don't mind that personally.
It's the easiest sale possible.
It is easiest sale possible. You're right.
It doesn't mean we have to like it, but I get the science behind it.
But the alternative is to sit him on the bench, and then you've just taken something that, whether it's Is there 10% chance, 15% chance, 20% chance that Dennis Smith Jr. turns into an asset, something in that range, whatever it is, it turns into 0% once you sit him on the bench and that's it. Okay.
Yeah. And I think also just one thing yeah. quickly, we're gonna run into so many quickly puns.
We are.
It's completely inadvertent. But you talked about the fact that these players develop and they learn even when they haven't played. Emmanuel Quickley didn't log a single minute in game one. I saw him right after he posted on social media. He had the game on his computer and he had the game on his television.
Oh no, he's
so like that sort of thing. Kid. Where yeah. I agree as well that the idea of having Dennis Smith Jr. out there for 20-25 games from a development standpoint, it sucks because Emmanuel Quickley might not be able to get that opportunity. But it's not like he's not learning. It's not like he's not growing. Yeah. He's still going to focus. He's going to be working extremely hard because that's all he seems to do in practice. It's going to be there. Just he's probably not going to get that game action that we would all hope for him to get.
You know what the nice thing about Quickley is? Unlike, God, it feels like my entire lifetime when the Knicks draft a kid and then, you know, maybe the coach isn't playing him as much or this or that, and you wonder like, oh, are they already having buyer's remorse? You don't have to worry about that with him because his coach is on the team now. So they know what they got. They love him. They clearly love him. And there's no reason not to love him. It's just a matter of like, when is the time going to come? It's going to come. If it doesn't come right away, you know, whatever. It is what it is. A couple more and then we'll finish up. We've already gone longer than I said we would. And I apologize for that. You are a trooper. Oh, this is going to be dicey. Is Kevin Knox fighting for a spot in the rotation?
I don't think he is.
I don't think he is either. We could move on. I don't think he is. Is there anybody else that I haven't brought up?
You want to talk about, again, this is only two preseason games, but if we really want to have a spicy conversation,
I don't even know who you're going to say. That's what? Who?
Well, it wouldn't be, is this player in the rotation? It is. And again, I know two preseason games. We're going to keep saying it. In fact, I'm going to keep saying, personally, I view sample sizes like around game 10 is when you can start to even consider them because otherwise just everything's skewed.
Yes.
So granted, keep that in mind, but the idea of, is this with Mitchell Robinson, with these up and down games,
oh, come on,
not about rotation. No, there's nothing to do with rotation. Obviously he's going to be in the rotation. He should be in the rotation and he should be considered starting. The idea instead of what does this mean long-term? Again, not basing it on two games. That is not where I'm at. It's just the fact of at what point do we, you know,
well,
does the team evaluate? But this isn't a conversation we necessarily have to have.
He right wasn't, now. He is literally on week two. Yeah, I think that literally week two, finishing up week two of the Tom Thibodeau, Kenny Payne, Johnny Bryant experience. This is a guy, I don't want to repeat myself because everybody's heard this before. The ultimate handle with kid gloves in every way. So you want to talk about, this is going to be a process with Mitchell Robinson. This is going to be a process with Mitchell Robinson. I'm not talking about him today. I'm not going to talk about him next week. I'm just, let's see where we're at in a month.
That's all right? Fine. Listen, there's,
I know,
we're,
I
there's
know.
Plenty of time. We were on the train to Spicy Town. So I figured but it's now at a screeching halt. We'll pick it back up. Hopefully we don't have to pick it up back up because it shows that he's so remarkable that we don't have to do anything.
You know what I picked up? Speaking of Spicy Town, I picked up some sriracha mayo for the first time. I've never purchased it. I've had it a lot. I've never purchased it from the grocery store. I purchased it this week and I've already used it a few times. Very good decision. Okay. All right. So I don't think there's anybody else that we need to ask questions about. And just to be clear, I don't think Emmanuel Quickley is fighting for a spot in the rotation because I don't think he's going to be in the rotation. I'd be shocked. I think I think he's going to be the guy that, like, when the team is getting blown out or when they're up big, God forbid, I think he's the guy that gets in the whatever, late third, early, mid fourth, whatever it is. And they see what he could do. And then he'll be in the rotation, whether it's after, whatever, 20, 25, 30, 40 games. Okay.
Keep in mind, just also one very fast thing. It takes one small injury to get him into the game.
Well, does
he's
it
really
though?
Not that far in terms of the depth chart.
But here's the thing. We're talking about 12 guys now. He's the 13th.
It's a little different, though, because of the positionality. If he were, you know, maybe a backup wing.
Because like they've already shown their hand that they want to play him a point guard.
Right. Like if he were like Bullock in that type of role, I'd say, you know, I think that's true. But based on the fact that he's got that expedited path to playing point guard, if that's how they want to run him, then he will see more opportunities. And Elfrid Payton was not healthy last year. Dennis Smith Jr. Also not healthy.
No.
Their track records aren't incredibly strong, although more so for Payton's than it is. That's all it takes. Just one, you know, 2 week injury and you're going to see quickly logging minutes at the one.
That's a good job by you to point that out. And I yeah. Man, I'm looking at this. All right. So let's put him aside for now. We both think Rivers is going to get time when he gets back.
Mm-hmm.
I think Bullock is out.
He could be.
I don't. Because, and I wrote as much at the end of in one of my most recent newsletters. If Bullock is in, then I don't see a path where Knox also gets time. Unless I'm missing something, because I've whatever the meme world, the numbers are happening or then letters and whatever.
Bullock to me is the perfect player of, okay, we've traded Alec Burks and one or two other guys. We need bodies and he can still space the floor.
Yeah, exactly. He's like the breaking case.
He's a constant pro in terms of his veteran leadership. I agree. And I could see him just filling that role. And it, again, just takes, if his groin acts up again, if it continues to plague him, he's going to see time. But after that, you know, what are you really getting out of them? What are you getting out of Reggie Bullock? Not a whole lot. So this is the problem with having a deep young team, but also having, you know, veterans. You have to find some sort of balance, and there's no scenario that's really going to energize every fan. Every person's probably going to be disappointed in one way or another.
Well,
and that's just the truth of it, and that's okay.
But they are, because once Rivers is back, one of Knox, Frank, or Dennis Smith Jr. is just not going to. There's going to be a game, and then one of them is not going to play. I think Frank has earned the time. Okay, I'm gonna. Here's my ideal rotation. You ready? After two preseason games, I'm willing to put myself out there. I want to see more of RJ Barrett with the ball. And I think that has to be priority number one this season, with the caveat that it cannot be RJ Barrett make stuff happen or bust. It has to be, we will give him the opportunities, but also we will, you know, there's an out there, right? So, but if it's Payton, that doesn't work. So it's impossible. Like the guy that I want to see RJ Barrett play with the most, honestly, is Emmanuel Quickley, because I like those two trying to figure out between the two of them how to be one competent ball handler. But that's
That's a post-trade deadline lineup, which I would love.
Like, I know I could sit here and I'd be like, I know in the last 30 games of the season what I want to see. That's easy for me to do.
100%.
But I can't. But right now it's just, man, I guess I want to see Peyton's going to start. You know,
and you need Burks' shooting, and RJ is not going anywhere. And it's either a question of whether you have Mitch or Noel, they're the same archetype of player in terms of rim-running, defensive-minded bigs who can block shots. So it then comes down to the four.
Honestly, you know what this is? You know what it is? Here's what it is. It's about Payton gets the quick hook, and you give RJ the reins of the offense after 5-6 minutes of the game. And who do you bring in for Payton in that scenario? You bring in a shooter. What shooter are you going to bring in? I guess you're going to bring in. See, but that's the thing. They don't have a
shooter. Right. And then you're also still running.
You bring in Frank, I guess.
You want the ball out of Peyton's hands. I'm more worried about the ball being in Randall's hands and Randall still staying in the game.
Well, right? then you could get Randall out of there and then you could bring in Toppin with a little bit more spacing. You know, and then eventually, and then Mitch. gosh.
It's tough. It's really hard. It's just, this is a very clunky fit because of Randle and because of Payton. And we've talked about Payton ad nauseum in terms of starting point guards and who's available. But I mean, Randle's a very different situation because the gift that keeps on giving is he's still under contract for this year and partially for the next.
Sorry. Here's what you do. I wasn't looking at him because he didn't play tonight. You bring in Rivers. That's who you bring in.
As your starter.
No, you keep the starters as they are, whether it's Noel or Mitch, whatever, one of those two. You bring in Austin Rivers for Elfrid Payton. That's the move.
So how long are you playing with those five
before you have some? I don't know, 5 minutes, 5 minutes to start each half, right? And then you bring in Rivers, and then Rivers gives you a little shooting, and he gives you a little play, but not playmaking, that's overstating it. He gives you ball movement, right? So it's not all on RJ. And then you give the quick hook to Randle after that, and you bring in Toppin. So then you could run with Rivers, RJ, Burks, Noel, and Toppin for a bit. You pull Noel for Mitch. And then all of a sudden you're with RJ, Rivers, Burks, Mitch, and Obi. And then last but not least, you could pull Burks for, I'm going to say it, Frank. And now I've just left either Dennis Smith Jr. or Kevin Knox out of my rotation because that's the last move to pull, right?
Yeah.
You know what? I feel a lot better about this than anything else. So this is where I'm leaving it. You, whichever one of those two guys you want to put in, put them in. That's where I'm at.
We'll see. Yeah, no, I think it sounds right. It's just a matter of whether, because there aren't that many primary initiators on the team, if they're going to decide to bring in Austin Rivers ahead of Dennis Smith Jr. Because now he's, you know, I mean, you could say positionless basketball, but, and I'd still say that Austin Rivers can, you know, facilitate and make better plays than Dennis Smith Jr. can, but you're then still having Dennis Smith Jr. languishing on the bench. And what are you necessarily going to do? And you have Quickly also on the bench. And then you're talking about some sort of lineup where, like, even if you have Toppin, then people are still going to be upset. Where if your five is Rivers, Burks, RJ, Toppin, and Noel, I mean, if it's Mitch, I think people will have different opinions on it because it, you know, it'll still feel like a long-term piece, three of them in the front court that you hope is the front court of the future. But other than that, it's just, this is the issue with having a lack of players who can really break other opponents down on the dribble or getting to the line or shooting effectively. Just pieces that can work together, but can work, but they just don't fit together.
If I could wave my magic wand, and which I, there's a magic wand in the other room. My daughter plays with it. She loves her magic wand. It's a wonderful toy. And they're so cheap. That's the first gift you should get any girl is a magic wand. Provides hours of enjoyment. If I can wave it and wave Randle off the team and give Knox, make Knox just be the NBA version of the guy he was in his first summer league, that would literally solve every problem on this team. Literally. Because Knox is the guy you thought you were drafting at 8, and he takes Randle's place, and everything is hunky-fucking-dory. We don't have a problem with the rotation. There's not too many guys. There's everybody's in their spots. Ugh. So frustrating. Really is.
How do you think
two preseason games? I'm sitting here, I'm shaking my fucking head. All right. I think we've beaten this horse about as much as possible. Jeremy, I know you wanted to say something before we got out of here.
Yeah, just really quickly. I was very touched. A lot of you were kind enough to reach out and in regards to my grandfather. What happened actually was that shortly after John and I recorded last week, my grandfather went to the hospital and they tried some treatment and it seems that it's progressing. He was released from the hospital into rehab. Ironically enough, last week I have another grandfather. Those are my two living grandparents. He was also in the hospital, not for COVID. It was a rough week. Both are now out. They're on the mend, but I really appreciated that a lot of you took the time both publicly and privately to send thoughts and prayers. It was very much appreciated. So I'm very fortunate and blessed to thus far report good news. We're not out of the woods yet, but a very hearty thank you.
I will thank everybody on behalf of Jeremy as well, because Jeremy means a lot to me. You are one of my dear friends. You've become one of my dear friends. And you get on here and you do this every week. I don't know how you do it, but you do. We should mark an anniversary for us so we could celebrate an anniversary. Like I celebrated with my wife tonight. When we should go, we'll go back and look at when the first pod is that we did together.
Yeah. Yeah. Why should Dolores get all the action?
She,
I need my John time. I only get like an hour.
How long were you holding the word action in your back pocket for?
It honestly came up.
No, it
not
didn't.
Even. No, it really did. I don't believe that. It's
no
true.
One's that
no, it actually did. You know, if I thought about it earlier, I would have said it. But it honestly came up organically. So
that's on that note. we on behalf of Jeremy and I, we thank you for listening to another episode of the Knicks Film School podcast. Hey, if you're a new listener and you like the show. Which what's wrong with you? Go rate us, review us, subscribe, tell your friends, tell your neighbors, tell your kids, tell anyone. We will be back with you with another episode soon. I got a couple episodes on the docket for this week that will be good, and then Jeremy and I will be back with you next Monday, and have a great and